mean, it's I
Yeah.
posted a chart recently about how you tend to see the gold miners move and then copper miners moving, and energy would be next, and then a lot of people talking about energy now, but the next one is usually agricultural commodities. And it's not because you need to have a necessarily a crystal ball or anything along those lines, but it's because commodities are usually highly interconnected. And so the cost to increase supply of if you think that inflation will remain higher than historical standards with a government that needs to suppress rates, well, that's nirvana for hard assets. You need to own some hard assets. And so yeah, this is why I just think that a lot of these other things are kind of meaningless. And you have the geopolitical premium that was completely priced out of oil itself, that I thought could change drastically. And then you have the cherry on top of looking at natural gas completely being, I guess, the only solution in the near term, real solution in the near term for the US economy to sustain this growth of data centers and electricity demand surge that we're seeing here in the US. So, yeah, look, I don't claim to have a crystal ball at all, but when I see a thesis that clearly positioning is very, there's nothing better than being contrarian and right. So it's not about finding a thesis that is just contrarian. That's really not the goal of an investor. But when you have a contrarian view that is right, that's where you make a lot of money.
Good day, everybody. It's me, just Steve Yang, here with Natural Resource Stocks, where we mine for stories that matter. And today I am joined by Tavi Costa, founder and CEO of Azuria Capital, a global macro thinker well respected in finance and commodity space. Tavi, thanks for being here. How are you?
I am great. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this conversation.
Absolutely, Tavi. Thanks for being here. I want to start with the big picture. If you can give us the 50,000-foot view, as my colleague Andy says, when you look at the natural resources, relative to the broader market today, where do we sit in the cycle? I mean, are we seeing the early stages of a shift towards metals and energy? What are your thoughts?
We're clearly seeing a rotation dynamic of commodities, which is a very normal behavior when you're in a secular bull market for hard assets. And every month or so, we see a new commodity surging in prices, and then a lot of volatility is what follows. And then you have some sort of a settling of prices, which tends to be drastically higher than the historical average price that particular commodity has been over the last decades or so. Silver
Yeah.
is a great example, gold is a great example, and now you're seeing this with oil. Natural gas starting to do the same as well. And so lots of these commodities have been and look, I don't think it ends there, right? I mean, I
Yeah.
posted a chart recently about how you tend to see the gold miners move and then copper miners moving, and energy would be next. And then a lot of people talking about energy now, but the next one is usually agricultural commodities. And it's not because you need to have a necessarily a crystal ball or anything along those lines, but it's because commodities are usually highly interconnected. And so the cost to increase supply of agricultural commodities is linked to energy prices themselves. And so if you got energy prices increasing, it has to have an impact on the supply of agricultural commodities. And so it becomes at least a little bit more fragile to a supply and demand imbalance that tends to then drive prices much higher. So that's the foundation of the thesis. Doesn't mean it will happen, but it's something to be aware of. And then you look at the implied volatility of a lot of these commodities, agricultural commodities. You can see, look at corn would be a great example, but just a DBA ETF, for instance, which includes other things outside of agricultural. It's just simply not priced for that type of upside volatility that you may see. And so Yeah, there's lots of things to be doing in this market. A few months, maybe a month ago or so, I would say that most of the things I liked were up a lot, and I was having a hard time deploying capital. And now I think there's lots of things to be doing here. So, excited about that.
Tavi, so you mentioned, gold and silver. You looked at oil, energy, and you also mentioned agriculture. I don't know if dominoes is the right analogy. If you have a better one, I'd love to take it. But it seems like the first domino to fall. I mean, I don't know what's triggering it. Is it a issue with the dollar, a fiat? I mean, historically, major commodity cycles often seem to coincide with weaker dollar regimes. Do you think we might be entering into one of those periods again?
I think it's slightly macro, not slightly, but it's really driven by macro forces, but also industry-wide issues. I mean, just looking at the CapEx that we've seen over the years in commodity producers as a whole, not just energy, not just miners, not just agricultural, but the overall environment, you can see that it's been highly depressed because of, just capital has not been attracted to these businesses. And so we're not seeing these companies spending enough money. So supply has been constrained. You're not seeing new projects coming online anytime soon, particularly in mining. And that sort of sets the stage for something to happen. But then on top of it, you have the obvious sort of, debt imbalance worldwide. And the US, to me, is not doesn't have the worst debt problem, but it does, because it carries the global reserve currency status, it does have an issue that has to be addressed, which is the sort of twin deficit imbalance that we often talk about. That has to do with the fiscal problem and the trade balance issue. The fiscal problem is one that, if solved by the obvious way to solve it, which is by reducing government spending, would immediately probably ignite a recession, if not a major one. So that is unlikely to be the path. I mean, it could be, but just the way politicians work, highly doubt they're going to go that route. Look at Doge. We don't even talk about that anymore.
What's Doge?
And so it's the currency, right? Or the crypto, not sure if we should even call it currency, but nonetheless, what you know, so your the way to address this is dividing the fiscal spending in two buckets. And look, again, we're just addressing one side of the deficit here, but which is the fiscal side. So fiscal spending has two buckets: pro-growth, non-growth. Pro-growth is when you're building a bridge and you're investing highways and whatever. Other side is there's a bunch of other things that do not generate growth in the economy, but they're necessary spending that happens through the fiscal side. There's lots of different things on the non-growth bucket, but only one is actually meaningful. Well, only one is the others are just not going to really make a big shift here, which is interest payments to GDP, right? Interest payments on the debt need to be reduced drastically. So if you take rates to zero, you basically cut your fiscal deficit by in half without causing a recession. That's probably what they're going to do, right? Like, so we have to operate under the assumption they're going to go that route. They're going to lower rates no matter what. And look, I come from a macro sort of world of thinking about markets and all that. And I used to be really, focused on labor markets data, inflation data. I don't even look at those things anymore. One, I think it's all manipulated. Okay. Two, it's just doesn't matter, right? I mean, who cares where unemployment data is, where inflation data is? They have to lower rates. I don't care what it does. If unemployment starts to move lower, they're going to come up and say, well, the economy is doing great, we should cut rates. Or unemployment is going up, they're going to say the same thing, because it's not what's driving the decision. What's driving the decision is the fact that we have interest payments to GDP at a 4 to 6% kind of range now, of which when you reach that range, you simply cannot be spending that anymore. That becomes a real problem. And so Trump, and then it gets to the point of people getting too focused on it. Is it the right or the wrong? It doesn't matter. It's the approach that he needs to take. It doesn't matter if it's the right or wrong. It
Yeah.
doesn't matter where inflation is. So if you think that inflation will remain higher than historical standards with a government that needs to suppress rates, well, that's nirvana for hard assets. You need to own some hard assets. And so, yeah, this is why I just think that a lot of these other things are kind of meaningless. And then just to go quick, I know that I'm going long on the answer, but the other side of it would be really what's happening on the trade balance issue. The trade balance is another thing that often isn't really discussed. But when you think about a business, a country is a business, and it has two forms of revenues. It's either collecting a lot of taxes relative to spending, which is not, right? So it's having a deficit, or it is exporting more than it's importing. It's also not doing that. And so that's what's called a twin deficit. You can run a twin deficit, but not for this long and not for a double digit twin deficit. And so both are a problem. And now the trade deficit side, there's a few ways you can fix that. One, to go quick, one is you rebuild your infrastructure to actually make America great again. You can do that, and then you start, producing your own products, and you change your economy in that sense. Well, that's one way. It'll probably take 7, 10 years to do that, right? I mean, you can't build a factory tomorrow. That's going to take a while to see those things. All right. Number two, well, you could negotiate new trade deals. Well, I hate to say it, but when you negotiate a trade deal with Mexico or with China or with Italy, or I don't care what country it is, there's lots of logistics that happens. You can't just simply say, I'm not importing this from you anymore because we're going to be importing from this other country. There are logistics that happens even within companies that you can't just simply change those dynamics. It takes a while for the market and the global economy to adjust. So let's just say it won't take 7 to 10 years, but maybe it will take 3 to 5 years to see something like that. Okay. So what's the third option, which we tend to see throughout history multiple times, and it's highly likely to happen, is the dollar. You can devalue the dollar by 20%, 30% versus the yen, versus not the yen because it's not that important here. It is important, but not crazy important, but against the Canadian dollar. That would make a ton of sense if we see that, or versus the Chinese yuan or the Mexican peso. These are economies that actually have a relevance when it comes to the trade deficit that the US is running with those economies. If you want to fix that, all you do it is, one way to not eliminate but reduce that burden is to just by devaluing the dollar versus those fiat currencies. So I operate under the assumption that we're going to see weaker dollar and suppression of rates. And any theme that is benefited by that, to me, is a fair game for the next 5 to 10 years. It's this very simplistic way of seeing the world, but I think it's going to work.
Well, you've also read the history books and seen the history of you kind of, it's not hard to figure out the Fed playbook either,
Yeah, I mean, well, I think the Fed has an issue, not the Fed, but the government has a
the
very
government.
severe problem of, the demand for US debt is, let's just say, some people will argue is in a declining rate. Others would claim it's not in a declining rate. And I think that's kind of factually right. It's not necessarily in a declining rate, but it's not as robust as it was 5 years ago. I think everybody can agree with that statement. And if that's the case, and there's going to be more debt coming online, then that's an issue. And 1/4 of the overall debt is going to be maturing a year from now. And the prior times we've seen that, it was okay because the debt problem was or the interest rates were about 0%. So, you reissue that debt at 0%, no problem. Now, if you're reissuing, 1/4 of your debt in a year from now at 3 to 4% interest rates, that's a problem. And so I think that the issue here is that there's going to be some regulatory changes on the way the government debt will be purchased, or in terms of the demand side. And we're going to see some changes in regulations to force some institutions to be the buyers of last resort. Of course, you can always do QE, but I think it's going to be the banks. If I would put a gun in my head, I would say the banks are going to be buying a significant amount, and potentially a few countries in exchange for other things will likely be buyers of US treasuries as well. By no means they're going to stop buying gold, but I think that they're also likely to be some trade negotiations that forces a few places, like we're seeing Spain and other places, believe it or not, buying US treasuries. So UK, and not a lot of people reporting on that because it's not a
Is
sexy
that,
report, but
yeah, is that not, I was going to ask you, why are we not hearing about those things? It's
no,
like,
it's not sexy,
it's not
right?
the headlines.
Everybody wants to talk about how central banks are selling treasuries, which
Right.
look, I'm part of that too. Like
Yeah.
I talk about these things all the time, but I need to be fair with the research because to me, it's not seeking attention. It's about seeking the truth. And, ultimately that's how you will, do well in markets. And so, look, we don't know what's happening, right? Why the UK is buying US treasuries. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know if it's related to some trade negotiation is happening under the table. But there's something going on. European ownership of US debt is on the upper trajectory,
Yeah.
while Chinese is not like they're selling, but it's just not, they're just letting those treasuries mature. They're not reinvesting into them. They're, if you will, revamping their balance sheet by acquiring gold and letting the treasury side of it
Yeah.
expire.
Tavi, I want to shift to gold and silver in particular, these precious metals. We've seen, what seemed to be a super parabolic move to experiencing a sharp pullback and then seems to be back in an upward trend. I wanted to get your thoughts on if that's what you see, and I would love your thoughts on any other major forces that you're looking at. I know that you're not really looking at inflation too much, except I don't know if you should with gold or not, but how do you see it developing from here?
Well, I think we're going to see, watch policymakers call this gas price increase as transitory to justify rate cuts. I find it interesting that Trump now is saying that oil prices increases is not an issue, that we're actually making money out of it. Well, that's a total shift of the narrative, right? I mean, what we heard from the very beginning. And look, I don't, I'm not trying to get political here at all. I mean, I couldn't
No.
care less about politics, but I'm focused in markets, and I think that that's an important shift that needs to be highlighted.
Okay.
Because if he is thinking that way, this is an important shift that will get more and more attention of policymakers as well. So yeah, I think this is quite problematic. The I what I'm likely we're likely to see here moving ahead is a large increase of inflation, or a reacceleration of inflation, that is likely to be seen from policymakers, at least from a communication perspective, that is just a transitory or short-term oriented, but they will still go ahead with reducing rates because they don't have an option here. And if that's the case, that accelerating inflation with lowering rates could be a very explosive setup for inflationary assets, in my view. And so I'm paying attention to that. And this is why I like energy. It's nothing to do with what's happening in the Middle
No.
East, but more, what's happening with the macro environment. And there's going to be more things to be doing here, obviously. Like, for instance, pay attention to what's happening with Latin America. It's very structural what's happening there. There's plenty of companies on a day like today that are down, in some cases almost like 5-7%, that I really think could perform quite well in the next 3 to 5 years that I am paying attention to these discounts that we're seeing. And yeah, it is a wonderful time to be, following markets this closely and deploying capital here. So I'm really excited to Latin America, especially as a safer area than the Middle East. The Middle East has shown its cards now of how, not that people didn't know about it, but I mean, yeah, amazes me that more people are moving to Dubai and those areas than Latin America. And now I think all those folks are going to be questioning those moves and maybe starting to look back. I mean, life, I've lived here a part of the year. It's wonderful. And not that I care in that sense, but it's so cheap. It's insane, right? I mean, so cheap, right? You go to a fancy restaurant and you spend $20, $10, and for a family of four. Sometimes I'm shocked by what I'm spending here. It's just amazes me. So it's wonderful if you're in, it's great to be here. I love it.
Tavi, a couple of questions. One, we talked about oil, energy. We talked about the Middle East. Maybe I don't know if we're giving it too much stock or too little stock, but you mentioned that it's more the macro than it is the Middle East for what determines the oil need or shortage or whatever it is. If you can expound on that, because it seemed like oil really spiked, with the news out with Iran. And, since we've experienced some heavy volatility, I got a whiplash with all this. So if you can kind of go over the fundamentals and maybe what the market is or isn't fully pricing in a little bit.
Yeah, I hope I'm not repetitive for those that have listened to anything on my side before, but I think there's a overwhelming focus on the triggers rather than the actual foundation of a thesis, which to me, what matters is the foundation. The problem with people that invest like I do, focusing on foundation of thesis, they have to be patient because, when you don't know the trigger, which I would argue very few people have consistency calling catalysts very well, short-term catalysts. So why even focus on that? It's the hardest thing in the world. So all I'm saying is there was a foundation of a thesis for energy from the very beginning. You could have seen this from a different perspective than geopolitics necessarily. One of I always argue that no, with well, all that's happening in the world with politicians trying to move lines on maps and saying I want this, I want that in terms of countries, this is not a normal, not a normal environment. So I have I happen to believe that deglobalization is much more structural than cyclical, and has to do more with the amount of overwhelming debt that we have in the system that is causing this. And in my view, what we're likely to see now moving forward is that, you have to think about oil as a macro asset, is very strategic for countries. There has been a lot of focus on oil being replaced and all those things, perhaps causing repricing of the commodity in the future, much lower, and but forgetting that we're not ready for that transition yet. And so what's the foundation of the thesis? The foundation is that the drill rigs in the US, the total amount of active drill rigs was declining about 30% from its peak levels 2 to 3 years ago. Nobody talking about that. We're not seeing major new supply coming online in the US. It feels to me like, the arguably this the production side of that could have actually been peaking. Then you look at the exploration and CapEx of most of these companies, and it's not growing at all, which also has a lead is it's also a very good leading indicator of supply. And then on top of it, you look at the positioning on the future side, which was mostly at one of its most shorted levels in history. Well, that's another thing. Then you look at the weight of the energy sector relative to the S&P 500 and materials combined, and it was one of its lowest levels in history, which doesn't usually stay in that those levels for the long haul. And you see the institutions completely moving away from energy because it doesn't fit the ESG agenda, when they didn't realize that the ESG agenda had its own flaws that now are becoming, more pronounced in terms of the issues that it had from the fundamentally from the very beginning. Then you look at the valuation of the energy companies, they're all incredibly good companies, particularly if you see a 10, $20 price change in the oil price per barrel. And then you have the geopolitical premium that was completely priced out of oil itself. That I thought could change drastically. And then you have the cherry on top of looking at natural gas completely being, I guess, the only solution in the near term, real solution in the near term for the US economy to sustain this growth of data centers and electricity demand surge that we're seeing here in the US. So yeah, look, I don't claim to have a crystal ball at all, but when I see a thesis that clearly positioning is very, there's nothing better than being contrarian and right. So it's not about finding a thesis that is just contrarian. That's really not the goal of an investor. But when you have a contrarian view that is right, that's where you make a lot of money. And so, I just thought that energy was falling in that bucket, and I wanted to deploy some capital there. I felt like almost like I was, everyday oil prices were down in the last 6 months or so. I felt like a drug addict just, looking at call options and buying. I was just like, oh my gosh, I need to buy more. And those paid off quite well. I honestly have another thing that I'm starting to feel that way in the markets today that I keep buying more and buying more and short term being wrong, but I don't mind because I've been buying it 1, 2 years out in terms of call options, and that is treasuries, long-term treasuries. I've been buying that because I think the entire curve is going to fall apart, and I don't know if it's a recession-driven move or just the politicians will drive yields a lot lower. Couldn't care less what the trigger is, but the foundation of the thesis is there again. Nobody agrees with me. I like the idea, so I keep buying these things, I keep adding to things that I think I could be right, and it's very contrarian in its nature. And it kind of fits into my macro world. Sorry, I didn't mean to move away from energy, but that's the way I think about
No,
energy and
that's
the way I'm thinking about now.
So you mentioned U.S. Treasuries, oil, natural gas. I talked to a lot of people in the commodity space, and the opinion is that oil, natural gas is, next big thing. I mean, we've already moved up quite a bit. Not sure if we're already priced in for that, or if you still see a lot of ways to go. And is there, metals, energy, agriculture right now where you think is the best opportunity right now? What do you feel most compelled by, and is there anything you'd be cautious about?
Well, I'm always cautious about things that are on the headlines because it's hard to make money on things like that. Like, I love the fact that silver is completely off the headlines now. And it's sort of oversold at oversold levels, approaching $90 an ounce. What a wonderful time to be buying silver. So I like that. I like energy still. Because energy companies have not seen what oil itself has done. But if you think about it, at $80 a barrel or so, which is slightly higher now or higher now, energy companies are, almost printing money here. So it's, they're, if oil prices just stay at these levels, which I think they belong to these levels and higher. I always thought that 60 or 50 was just not the right price for oil. I think it's closer to 100 or so. And if that's the case, then where should, of course, and that's assuming no wars, right? But I mean, if this war keeps getting worse and worse, I mean, nobody knows where prices could go because the disruptive side of that on supply could be very meaningful. Right now, it's not as meaningful because everybody has inventories, but you give it, 60, 90 days of a conflict, the whole world could change very, very dramatically. So yeah, I like owning oil. I've always argued as well back, not too long ago, that if you're gold company, copper company, silver company, and you're not hedging your energy costs, you're just out of your mind. Well, we've finally seen a big move here. And so that hedge should have, hopefully saved a few of these companies. And that was certainly the right move. I like a lot of things right now. I'm really excited to put some capital to work. I like corn a lot. I really like I'm not adding to energy. I'm just keeping my position right now. I have a lot of ideas in mining companies that are down 30, 25%, that I really like, that I've always wanted to own. And at these prices, they are going to be doing quite well. And I'm looking to add to those names as I deploy more capital here. I'm also liking this volatility in Brazilian equities now, and some other Latin American names that has have been facing some volatility, and so I've been buying that as well.
So you mentioned the mining companies. Do you like large producers? Do you like ETFs? Do you like the, juniors or explorers as well? I mean, what do you kind of think is the best player at this point?
I think there's two ways. I like positions where you can. The older I get, I starting to really like the few derivatives that you can buy on liquid companies, because most people that buy those things are usually more boring institutions that are just looking to get exposure to mining for a 20, 30% sort of return. If you go to the junior side, I have plenty of positions on the juniors. The way I struck that I construct that is by having a few core positions that they're companies that have very solid quality assets. And I have like, man, I don't know, top five, six companies that I own that I call it my core positions. And I have more speculative, smaller names that I own as well. That I usually don't talk about it because they're very small companies, and I don't want to, I don't want the company to move up in prices. First, I'm not gonna, pump and dump things, number one, and two, I don't want prices to get ahead of themselves relative to fundamentals. I prefer the real way to make money is if a company really puts out great results and moves up and so forth. So I don't tend to talk about those, but there's plenty sort of exploration companies that I like that are smaller businesses. The larger businesses, like 2 billion, $1, $2 billion kind of market cap, I don't mind talking about them. I use them as my core of the portfolio. And then I like to buy call options of liquid companies. Like if there's a liquid, like I one of the best returns I had in 2025 was buying call options in Barrick. Which, when you find these opportunities, I'm not buying that anymore, by the way, but when you find these opportunities where a company has lagged and the whole industry has moved and nobody believes it could move, but it will move just because of flows, and you know that the option's so cheap that if you get a 15-20% move, you can get a 4x, 5x type of move in the option itself. I kind of like those ideas. I did a lot of that with the large companies in oil recently. So Oxy and others, I bought call options in all of those, and those had a major move as well. I think you're not in the same place with I don't I'm I would I probably won't be doing this in call options with miners. I just want to buy some mid cap names, to be honest, to add to my core positions. I think there is a few companies I've been really chasing here recently that I was waiting for a 20, 30% pullback to add to it because of a entry point risk. And I think they're starting to look very attractive. And so I'm going to start adding. They're usually in the mid cap, call it 1 to 3 billion.
Well, Tavi, I love kind of getting into your brain a bit. I do probably want to ask you how to invest in corn, but Before we do that, I mean, I'd really love to get to know kind of a little bit more of where people can pick your brain further. I know that you got Azuria Capital. If you can tell us about what you do there, what that's all about for us.
Yeah, Azuria Capital will ultimately be a hedge fund structure to invest in strategies that I believe will play out and unfold for the next 5 to 10 years. We'll start with a mining strategy, then move towards also energy and also Latin America. Why it's not, people don't know much about it. It's because it's been internally funded and internally the capital has been invested in different ways internally, and eventually we'll expand the assets to attract outside capital. But for now, what I've, part of the vision is to also have a research arm of the business, which is Substack for now, and Twitter as well has a subscription under my name to see those research pieces. And the goal is to have a real macro analytical, again, arm of Azuria that would provide great insights that are very unique and some exclusive charts and ideas about macro. Some of them will fit into the portfolio of the hedge fund, some others will not. There are plenty other ideas that I view it for the next 1 to 2 years that don't fit the 5 to 10 year time frame that I'm trying to invest at the hedge fund level. So, that's basically what we're trying to build, as a way to open up the fund for outside capital. I'll keep focusing on the research arm, which is growing very quickly now. I just want to focus on that until it becomes to a larger size, and I can then use that as another part of the overall business. So there's going to be lots of things to be doing here. Another, been living in Brazil also be doing more and more business here, and I'm working on launching an energy company as well. It's all sorts of things that I'm working on the side, but they're all part of the vision of Azuria, which is right now mining, energy, and Latin America.
Tavi, can you give us the name of your website as well as the spelling of your Substack and X, or just so that people can find the right guy?
Good question. I think my Substack is at Tavi Costa, and I think my X is at Tavi Costa as well. So easy. My website's not ready yet, so I it's you can see it says that it's going to be launched eventually. That's not necessarily true. I will launch eventually, but don't expect it to be there tomorrow. It's funny enough, but it will be there eventually. The goal is to have a active website, of course, but it's as soon as the fund is ready to go, then it makes sense to have a website. Otherwise, it's just no, that's just funded internally for now. And once we're ready to onboard clients, I think we'll be opening for others as well. So that's the idea.
Awesome. Tavio, last final question. You don't have to keep it long, but what's the best way to invest in corn?
Futures, definitely not the corn ETF. That is a levered ETF. Do not buy levered ETFs. That's one lesson for anybody here, is to never buy a levered ETF. If you make money, good for you. Don't do it again. Yeah, I mean, they're awful products and you can lose a lot of money on them. So don't do that. I like some other agricultural names, particularly in infrastructure, where infrastructure tends to be a little bit more interesting than fertilizers, because fertilizing companies also use a lot of nat gas and other energy inputs that could be hurting their margins when you have energy prices rising. So you can catch the right time of the cycle every now and then, but you obviously playing, that gap between agricultural commodities activity and prices versus the price of energy. And it's not easy to predict that. At least I don't think so. So I like, the infrastructure plays of agricultural look more interesting. There are plenty, not plenty, but there's a few that you can look at that have plenty liquidity Again, I'm looking for a pullback there. These things have moved a lot recently. Some of them are up 30 plus percent in the last 15 days or so. I'm not going to add to those positions now. So I'm just waiting. I'm sure they're going to come back down. I'll be able to add to them once again. And I think those are interesting positions to have.
Tavi, thanks so much for our listeners. I will be putting Tavi's links and socials, and maybe you can be follow him to see when his soon to come website is going to come about. But make sure you follow him. I myself not giving investment advice. I'm just Steve Yang, learning alongside you from people smarter than me. Please reach out to Tavi and other people like him. Everybody, stay smart, stay curious, stay disciplined. Tavi, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. Take care.